Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharakana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. Thank you for joining us, and don't forget you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Today, we're joined by our guest, author Bernice Bennett, of the new book, Black Homesteaders of the South, and the following contributors to the book, Orish Jenkins, Deborah Mitchell, and Dr. Nona Edwards-Thomas.
Bernice Alexander Bennett is an award-winning author, genealogist, nationally recognized guest speaker, storyteller, and producer host of the popular Research at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio program. She is also the first recipient of the Ida B. Wells Service Award given by the Sons and Daughters of the United States Middle Passage for her dedication to broadcast stories about enslaved and indentured ancestors of African descent.
Bernice also received the Elizabeth Clark Lewis Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society Genealogy Award in 2019 for original research in support of African-American genealogy. Bennett is a volunteer with the Homestead National Historical Park Service and has devoted her grassroots skills to identifying and encouraging descendants of Black homesteaders to share their stories. Deborah Mitchell, Dr. Thomas, Orish Jenkins, welcome to Speak On It. And of course, with Bernice Bennett.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we will go ahead and get started. Bernice, can you share your passion for writing the book and the importance for our listeners about learning about Black homesteaders of the South and connecting with contributors to obtain their personal Black homesteader stories to be part of this important project?
Well, I want to call it passion, but I also want to call it a necessity. That this book really provides the missing and forgotten history of Black homesteaders in the South. I mean, we now are looking at stories that are written by descendants. And these stories are real. And they reinforce the pride that these descendants have upon finding that their ancestors own land. Now, this is something that when I put the message out on Facebook, asking individuals, did your ancestors own land under the Homestead Act of 1862? Well, it was very interesting with some of the responses. Some said, oh, we didn't get land. We didn't have land. We were enslaved. Well, we need to think about that. Yes, many, of course, were enslaved. However, there was the emancipation. You went through the various amendments. And you also had this act that gave individuals an opportunity to apply for up to 160 acres of land. Now, it's important for people to understand that the application process for Black and white was the same, which means that when you look at an application, if you are not a descendant of a Black homesteader, then you wouldn't know. Therefore, it's important for the descendants to actually do their genealogy and to take that look and to look for that land. And this is what was so exciting. And I want to tell you, every time a story would come up on the national Park Service website. Yes, I celebrated and I sent the information all over the Facebook pages because I wanted people to know that yes, we were getting land. Some people I would even call superstars. Joyce Ann Gray, she's out of Nebraska. She was writing stories left and right. Dr. Shelley Murphy, out of Michigan, the same thing. Denise Griggs, out of Mississippi. We had individuals that got so into this. And this is what I want you all to understand. Once you get into finding your ancestors' land, you want to keep going because not only are you finding the land, you're finding information about the community and about relationships that people are having with each other. And this is something that unless you're going to spend time to study the land case files, I want you to understand that if you go on, let's say, Ancestry.com or the Bureau of Land Management, and you put your ancestor's name in, and that ancestor's name pop up with a land patent, you are at the end of the process. You need to go back and go to the beginning of the process. And the beginning of the process involves documentation, primary documentation. And this is what these descendants were able to obtain. They were given this wonderful opportunity to request a land entry case file, to receive that file, and then to go through the process of analyzing, when did my ancestors settle on the land? Wow, what did they do on that land? How many acres did they settle? What kind of house did they have? What about the land? What did they cultivate? And you start then looking and they have people coming in as witnesses. Now, who are those witnesses? Those witnesses could be family members. How do you know? That's where your genealogy comes in.
Exactly.
So this book actually celebrates the resilience. And I want to say it over and over again. We had to go through a lot. When you think about someone applying for land, public land, and then getting that land, well, they didn't just get it in one day. They had to live on that land for 5 years. They had to cultivate it. And then they had to show proof. And that proof meant having those different witnesses come back and say, yes, yes, this is what they did. Yes, they cultivated the land. Yes, we understand this is right. And so we are at a point where as a descendant, and I am a descendant, and I am so proud to say I'm a descendant, and I learned about my own ancestor through my grandmother, because she said her grandfather owned a lot of land. So individuals found out about this land different ways. Some through their research, others, they were smart enough to say, let me take a look. Let me just look and see. And when they did, they said, could you please get this land case file for me? And once they got that case file, everything opened up. And so this is what we're talking about. Now, when we talk about the South, the reason this book is focusing on the South, because the stories that were being submitted for publication on the National Homestead Historical Park site, I started to see a trend. I started to see stories coming in from Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, Florida, and Alabama, and reached out to the descendants and basically proposed to them, that we pulled to put together a book. And so on October the 29th, I submitted a proposal to the History Press. And with that proposal, I indicated that we would have stories by descendants. And I didn't tell them exactly how many, but this book consists of 49 descendant stories, okay? Now, the largest number of stories are from Louisiana and Mississippi, but it does not mean that those stories from Alabama, Florida, and Arkansas are no less better. We just need to get even more. And I think what I have seen and what I've observed with individuals is that they're asking questions now. They're trying to understand. And one of the things that I want people to understand is that the entire United States did not represent the public land states. So that when someone will write to me and say, oh, my ancestor was from Texas. Well, my response was, I'm sorry, the Homestead Act did not have any impact on Texas. They will say, well, what about Delaware? No. So we're looking at ruling out, and I guess I shouldn't say the word rule out, but the 13 original colonies in Texas were not a part of the Homestead Act. In fact, we're talking about moving west. We're talking about land that was available. It was public domain land, and it has certain requirements. So this is what you need to understand. Individuals had to be over the age of 21. Never take up arms against the United States. Men and women could apply, as well as immigrants could apply. You needed to understand that. So when you start looking at some of the stories in this book, you will see women, you will see couples, you will see a man who started off, he passed away, but he had a wife and she continued the process, which is what I love the most. You also will see beautiful pictures of the descendants' ancestors. So what this book is doing, this is a celebration. This is a book that is a celebration of Black history in America, the history that has not been told. But now this is the first of its kind. And I hope that many, many more will come after this book because it is something that needs to happen. Now, it's not to negate the fact that you also had a large number of Black homesteaders of the Great Plains. In fact, the National Homestead Historical Park Service has a large number of stories from the Great Plains. However, we are moving because the University of Nebraska at Lincoln has the Center for the Great Plains, and those stories are being told, but our stories are being told by descendants. And this is the part that I want to emphasize over and over again. Nobody's going to know what's going on in your house, but you know, because you're writing the story. You are saying things about your family because you know. And there's a story in this book, and I just want to read it because it's the last sentence in this book, and it's one of the Alabama stories. And it states in this story that, and it was talking about Luke, and when you read the story, you'll know more about it. Luke was born enslaved, lived through emancipation, was registered as a voter, owned land during Reconstruction in the South, and used his freedom to become a homesteader. Because of his tenacity, the Scunniers family still own their land as of 2021.
Wow.
Mount Moriah AME Church no longer stands, but its cemetery remains in use, now known as Mount Moriah Memorial Cemetery. And you will find several, I want to say, conclusions of various stories like this. Because the question is, well, do they still own the land? Well, yes. Some will say my ancestors still own that land. And so we want to take it as far as we can, but we have at least identified who those individuals are. We have used primary sources to tell these stories. And let's just put it this way. This book illustrates the strong community support required by the Black homesteaders to acquire their land. And as you read these stories, you can't help but pick that up in the book.
Well, let me just say, if you didn't know about the Black homesteaders, now you know. Thank you. Thank you.
I just want to add too, and it's something that we say often, and here on the podcast, something I say a lot, something we say at odds, just in a lot of Black genealogy spaces where, you know, Black History Month is awesome. It's great to know about, you know, the household names and their history, but it is also so important to know about your own family history and how it plays into the larger historical context. And I feel like the Black Homesteaders of the South Project is a perfect example of that, because it's a great intersection of genealogy and the larger American history, and how those things interplay. And I think it's just a really powerful testament, you know, like you said, Bernice, that this is, you know, this is American history, and it's important. These stories need to be told, and they may not be household names, but they're important names nonetheless.
That's right. So that's a shared history. Shared history.
And I definitely want to acknowledge the enormous support from the National Homestead Historical Park site. When you think of park services, you go there looking for stories. Well, guess what? Whose stories are now there? The Black homesteader stories.
Wow.
And we are so fortunate to have Jessica Corgi as a wonderful liaison. And I said to Jessica, look, I will be a volunteer. I will do whatever it takes for us to get those stories. And I also want to acknowledge the support from the National Archives. Yes. Without that support, we would not have had those land entry case files to help people tell their stories. Mm-hmm. And so I just have to just say that acknowledging that support is just so important to all of us. And we need to also, when we venture into a new project, we need to think partnership.
Right.
And when we think partnership, that means we're working hand in hand for a common goal. And the common goal for all of us is to tell the story.
Right. Well, Bernice, let me just say this. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing. It is an important work. And I love how you invited contributors or descendants of Black homesteaders to participate as well. And so our first contributor is Orice Jenkins. And Orice, we would love for you to share a little bit about your ancestor, your homesteader story, and what's the impact that this discovery has made on you?
Sure, and thank you so much for for having us on here. This is so wonderful. So I'm so grateful to have three stories in this book. I have two Alabama stories and one Florida story, which was a surprise to me because I'm all Georgia all the way on my research. All lines go back to Georgia. But, you know, Alabama and Florida share borders with the state of Georgia. So that's where my family had their land. The first story I found was my great-great-grandfather, Vandy Hutchins. And I was surprised because, and you know, I've been listening to Miss Bernice Bennett for a long time. I listened to all of her radio shows. She had Homestead people coming on all the time. And I still never realized until I saw her do a Zoom presentation where she showed the patent. And I said, wait a minute, I've seen that before. And I realized I had that for my ancestor, Vandy. And I had never thought about what it meant or, you know, even going to the next step to confirm, you know, what he did to get that patent. So I got on Facebook and contacted Ms. Bernice and she sent me my files, I think the next day. And I wrote that story the day after that. I was just so excited to get that information, especially because I didn't know a lot about Vandy. And he also applied for his land in the 1880s. And, you know, we don't have any 1890 census. So I really did not know a lot about him during that time period. And he ended up in Georgia by 1900. So I was really trying to figure out, okay, where was he? What was he doing? And I was so intrigued that I went to Alabama myself during this process while we were getting the book together to see that land and to try to go through deeds and figure out what happened and what was going on. So that was really exciting to find that. And then I found his father-in-law, Clem Horn, my great-great-great-grandfather, also had a patent. I think they got theirs the same day, actually. And they had one of the same witnesses. So I wrote his story as well. And that almost brought me to tears because his testimony was so interesting. It was very hard to read. So that's why I was crying at first because I couldn't read the handwriting. But then I saw that he said he had owned a pair of chairs and a table since freedom. And I was like, what does that mean? Since freedom? What does that mean? since he was emancipated, you know, since Juneteenth or since, you know, 1865. So thinking about that was really, really deep for me. Seeing his age as well, he was 63 years old. So he's probably one of the older homesteaders that are in the book. Also, he signed with an X when he first went to apply for the homestead. But 5 years later, he signed with his name, which means that at some point, he learned how to write his name.
Mm-hmm.
That was very, very special to me because, in fact, he's the only ancestor on my grandmother's side of the family that I know could write. You know, other than my grandmother who I knew and her mother who I knew, I don't have any other ancestors that I know could write. So to see that he was enslaved where it was, you know, against the law for him to write. And now, you know, 5 years after making this first claim, he goes back and he can write his own name. And twice actually he signed it. There's two signatures in the whole packet. So that was exciting. And then the last story was for not a direct ancestor, but a relative of mine by marriage, Stephen McCaskill. And I was researching his family because he is actually the grandfather of one of my favorite musicians, the great Sissy Houston.
Wow.
And her family is from Blakely, Georgia, just like my family. So I've always known that we were related. And I always keep up with researching their side and my side. And then I noticed that patent again that showed up that I didn't notice before I got involved with this book. But now that I know what to look for, when I see that patent or a Bureau of Land Management record, I know I need to investigate that. I need to call Bernice Bennett so that she can help me get that that file. So I was also grateful to write Stephen McCaskill's story, and that's in the book as well. And of course, being the grandfather of Sissy Houston means he's the great grandfather of Whitney Houston, Dionne Warwick, Dee Dee Warwick. They descend from people that were enslaved and were able to get their own land, you know, during the Reconstruction period and during the early 1900s. So it's truly amazing to see the greatness that they come from and that we all come from. You know, those of us that are descendants of these Black homesteaders, I'm just so filled with pride to know this information. So thank you, Bernice, for bringing us along this journey with you.
Well, you said something that was really powerful, and that was where he said, sense freedom. And Chiricana has this thing, though, she goes, I felt that. I felt that. That was deep. Sense freedom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I couldn't believe what I was reading.
And Oris, can you share a little bit more about, because I think visiting the land is really, really important. And it's sort of like a natural progression for a lot of us when we do our family history. Can you share how that felt for you visiting that land?
It was scary. Mm. I'm a city boy. I'm from Hartford, Connecticut. So what am I doing in Alabama in these fields? And, you know, I mean, it's very interesting. But, you know, another one of our, you know, writers in the book, Dr. Mary Clark, her family is from the same county as mine in Alabama. Mm. And a lot of her family members still own that land. And she also went to Alabama right after I did. And so we were kind of, you know, coordinating our trips and trying to, you know, figure out, okay, how's it going to feel when we get there and when we stand there and, you know, how is it going to, it was just, I can't even really put it into words. I'm still processing it. It's been over 10 months since I went to Alabama. Wow. I still can't even believe that I'm on the same place. And it's the same. And you could even see, if you look at an aerial map, you can see that some of the plots are still laid out just like how they were for our ancestors. You know, you can see the actual, the boundaries of the land. Some of them have not changed. So it was really, really interesting to see that, wow, my ancestor cleared this land. You know, this might have been a wilderness and trees before my ancestors got here.
Right.
So just thinking about what they might have built that might be under the ground that I can't see right now, but, you know, it's still there contributing to, whatever's growing on the land now. It was a deep experience. It was a homecoming, really, because I'd never been.
Oh, I love that. A homecoming.
A homecoming, yeah. I'd never been. So I really was like, okay, I belong here. This is where I came from.
So next time you go get some soil.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
I forgot to, that's a good point. I used to get, which was weird, I used to get sometimes pick a piece of cotton off the side of the road when I was visiting places, you know, that I had ancestry in, but I haven't gotten soil yet. That's a good idea.
Yeah, that is. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that, Oris.
Thank you.
So next, our contributor, we'd like to hear from Deborah Mitchell. If you could share a little bit about your ancestor and their homesteader story and what the impact was for you with discovering your Black homesteader.
Sure. So my story is actually written in collaboration with my father, who's 82 years old. I was able to visit the land and walk the land last year, actually. And I was just amazed that actually my ancestors actually lived on this land. And I asked him, I said, well, how did you, this was before I knew about the land patent, the land patent documents. So I asked him, I said, well, how did all this land come to the family? And he wasn't really sure. And I said, well, is there anybody in the family that knows how this land was obtained? And he really wasn't sure. So that was one of the things that I wanted to make sure that I came back home and did my research on. Now, mind you, I had been doing research for a lot of years. And I, like Oris, had seen these documents, the land patent documents in the ancestry. And I had no idea what all of that meant. Until I was introduced, obviously, to Bernice Bennett, and then I found out that I could actually get the actual documents to this land. So we were able to get the documents. Now, my dad does not know that I have these documents. So this is all going to be a real nice surprise for him when he reads in the book that he actually was able to write this story with me. So my ancestor is my great-great-grandfather, who was George Jones, and he was born in South Carolina in 1846 and married to Caroline Evans before moving to La Crosse, Florida. And at 34 years old, he applied for 40 acres of land with the Gainesville land office in 1891. Then he cleared the land and he cultivated the land to include a log dwelling, a kitchen, and a corn crib. And so I, when I saw that word corn crib, I was like, what is a corn crib? So that was something that I learned, had to learn, like that was language that I never heard. So I asked my dad, I said, what's a corn crib? He said, Deborah, it's a barn. I said, well, how would I know that? How would I know that? That was language I never heard of, a corn crib. And then I Googled it, and sure enough, it was like a barn, like a barn type structure. So that was something that I learned, and I thought that was very interesting. So anyway, he cleared and cultivated the land. And by 1896, he and his wife had 9 children, and everybody was required to work on the farm. I'm told by stories that he and his wife were very strong people of faith, and that they taught their children that hard work pays off. And so so as a result, the children would work up from sunup to sundown, my dad told me. So George received his patent to the land in 1896. He died in 1915, and the land was then transferred to my great-grandfather, Silas Jones, and he lived on the land for 80 years until his death in 1970. And then the land was transferred to his oldest son, George Jones, and he lived on the land with his family until 1990. Now, it's just remarkable to me that I told my dad, I said, this is just amazing that after 131 years, this land is still in the family. Yes. And I was so honored to be able to walk on that land. And unlike ours, I was able to get some of the soil. We have it. Oh, nice. We have it in a plastic bag. We have the soil. And it was actually my husband's idea to get it. And I didn't even know he had it until we got back to the car. I was like, what is that, honey? He's like, it's soil and we have it. So I was very, very happy about that. I was just honored to be able to write this story and to be a part of this project. It was just amazing to me. I just felt a closer kinship to my ancestors after having written this story. I felt like I was knitted to them at this point. Mm-hmm. I felt like I knew them. I mean, this 131 years ago was a lot of years ago. And to try to connect to an ancestor from that long ago, to me, almost seemed impossible. But after I was able to get those documents and I saw what they had to go through to get the land and to keep the land, and to cultivate the land and to do all of that, I thought that was just an amazing thing. And not only to mention that in the ancestry records, it stated that my ancestor, that George and his wife, neither of them could read or write. And I'm thinking, well, in today's world, how do you do that? How do you go through that entire process without being able to read and write? And it's just amazing of the resilience that Bernice talked about, of how they did not stop until he actually received that patent, and I'm so glad he did. And not only that, his family was able to continue to keep the land, and it's still there. It's just an amazing story.
Yes.
Wow.
Love it.
It's something you mentioned, Deborah. I wanted to kind of go back to, so you collaborated with your dad on this, and the other contributors can also chime in if they feel free, but what was that like? Do you usually collaborate with your father on genealogy projects? Was this the first time? How was that?
Okay. Not at all. Actually, before this story came to be, I actually went to visit my dad last year just to visit. And so he took me to this was my first time visiting him, and he took me to the land. Hmm. He took me to the graveyard. And then he explained to me how the graveyards were separated, where you know, the whites were on one side, one in front, and then the blacks were in the back. And so I was able to visit my ancestors for the very, very first time.
Wow.
And then he took me to the land. And then he explained to me where the house actually sat. He actually remembers where it actually sat.
Wow.
It was just an amazing experience. And I don't think he understands the depth of what that meant to me. I really don't think he understands, because he was there. He had to live on that land and he had to work that land. So right, for him, right. It was just life. but to me, it was a privilege.
Oh, y'all are coming with the quotes today. Get it to them. Homecoming.
Kind of, isn't that, I feel this, I feel this, I'm feeling this. Yes.
I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
So our next contributor is Dr. Nona Edwards-Thomas, and we're excited to hear your story. And also, if you could share with us a little bit about the blog that you have as well.
Well, I would like to start off by saying I went to a family reunion in 1987. And it was in the county where my ancestor homesteaded land. Prior to going to the reunion, my mother said, "Oh, our family owned land." I was incredulous. Oh, is that possible? He was formerly enslaved. He couldn't read or write. How did he get a hold of any land? I didn't believe her. But when I went to the family reunion, all of my family members says, "Oh, yes, that is true." I decided to do genealogy research, and I've been researching my family tree for 30 years. I was able to obtain the homestead records from the Bureau of Land Management about 17 years ago from concerning my great-grandfather, Irvin Brumfield. But more importantly, I found out that people that were also married into the family were homesteaders too. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, I decided to start a blog. And I was inspired after attending a national genealogy conference. There was a speaker, he had a nom de plume of the Ancestry Insider. And he showed me how to create a blog. And I've been blogging about my family tree for the past 10 years. Within that blog, I have at least 7 or 8 Bureau of Land Management stories and about their descendants. So I met Bernice serendipitously. I was on a National Genealogy website, and I decided to introduce myself on their forum. On the forum, I talked about that I was the self-appointed family historian, and I mentioned my family's names. And I don't know why, but I put down my phone number. 10 minutes later, Bernice calls me. We talked, and I found out, lo and behold, she's a cousin.
Wow.
So in the process, she had looked on my blog and she realized that I had been blogging about family stories and the Bureau of Land Management and homestead records. And she invited me to tell some of the stories. I would like to say that when you start to find out the history of your family, when you start to learn about homesteaders, you realize that this is something that they don't give you in school. You realize this is an unknown history. And if we don't tell our story, who will? I feel that in terms of the education that I have received, I've learned about the history of this country and somehow and how people in this country of color have been treated. It hasn't all been rosy. Some of the homesteaders stayed on the land. One of the stories that's not in the book, it took him 23 years to get his land.
Wow.
He filed, he missed his witness date. They canceled the homestead. He had to reapply. It has been a journey for many Black people of the former enslaved to get their homestead. And I want to mention also that I have relatives still living on the land. Now, you know, they tried to make a secret out of that. I think they thought that somebody wanted to live in Mississippi, but I was not interested in doing it. So I still have relatives living in that area. And when I've been to the area many times, never thought about getting any soil, but I've been to the area many times visiting family members and doing genealogy research. And I'm glad that I had the opportunity to do that type of research. And I would like to encourage everyone to write more stories. And I would like to tell you the name of my blog is Brumfield Genealogy and Other Branches and Trees. And this particular blog is also featured in the county library's website.
Awesome. Wow, that is so powerful. Is there one homesteader that stands out to you out of all the ones that, you know, you've researched?
One homesteader, his name is Isom Brumfield. Now, his story is not in the book, but he was 63 years old when he applied for his homestead. And during the course of cultivating the land, he went blind. Mm-hmm. He missed his date for filing his land patent. Now, the cause of his illness, we'll never know. But he, with the help of some of his friends who were his witnesses, they helped him get his homestead. Now, in the records, they said he cultivated 25 acres. I don't know how a blind man does that at 63 years old. But he had help, apparently, from people in the area, other homesteaders, other people who knew him. And after he received the homestead, I haven't found a death certificate for him. But after he obtained his homestead, he was no longer enumerated in the census. So I assume that he passed away. But that, I felt, was just an amazing story that someone could do that.
We've said time and time again that our people, our ancestors, were resilient. They survived and they were resilient despite the challenges. So what a powerful story from everybody, stories from everyone.
Absolutely. And I guess I'll just kind of throw this question, you know, as we talk, you know, more questions come up. So I'm curious from, you know, the contributors, anyone can chime in of a couple of things. One, did the witnesses, did you find that the witnesses were, you know, really helpful, or to what extent did they like shed, you know, new light on information that you didn't know before? And then I guess the second part to that is, you know, what are some new things that you learn uncovering your homesteader?
Well, I just want to say something about some of the witnesses to my ancestors' land. Mm-hmm. First of all, I was totally surprised to find that one of the witnesses was actually in the family Bible.
Wow.
And he served as a witness for my grandmother when she got married in 1913. Wow. When I asked my mother who he was, she said, oh, he's a friend of the family. He was so much of a friend that his nephew and my great aunt were married to each other. And so when I started just following the witnesses, I mm-hmm. saw all kinds of relationships coming together. Mm. And yes, most of the witnesses did validate the information that was stated by the claimant. In fact, I have not found any witness that contradicted what the claimant said about what they did and how long they lived on the land. So it's really significant to follow those people. When we talk about the fan club, if you want to use those words, when we talk about them, you are looking at neighbors, you're looking at friends, you're looking at people that are there to help. And you know they have to know each other. And when you start paying attention to the census, you will see they're living next door to each other, mm-hmm. down the road from each other. And, you know, I always have this fantasy that they all got together in a little cabin and said, I'll be your witness if you be my witness. I'll you dig, you know, dig and, you know, tear down these trees and cultivate this land if you help me, because I could see how they then acquired their land. It wasn't all in the same year. Right. One would be 1895, the other 1896, then another 1887. I mean, you just have to pay attention. The genealogy is so important when you start studying this stuff, because it's not just the case files, it's all the other information that you have to gather. Going to the courthouse, looking at the tax records, looking at the ledger forms, looking at who's next door to your ancestor on that ledger sheet. All of that information becomes so valuable when you look at the homesteader. Those, our relatives, our ancestors left so much for us. And for that, I am forever grateful. I really am. I when I look at the cover of the book and I see these beautiful, beautiful pictures, and when you go inside the book and you see documents, you see pictures, you see stories, you know, we are talking about people with so much pride. And right now, all of their ancestors are now in a history book.
Love it. Love it.
Very, very visual. So in my mind, as everyone was sharing, I could see that our ancestors going, hey, wait, they're talking about us. Hold on, wait a minute. They're talking about us. We keep them alive by researching, documenting, sharing, and preserving their stories. And that's, I think, right, that this is just a wonderful, wonderful work, and look forward to finishing my book. I wanted to know if any of the other contributors, when you were doing your research, if any of the other witnesses that you discovered that they were actually family members?
Yes. I almost just stopped there because I haven't told my family this exactly, not all of them, but my two Alabama stories had the same witness. His name was Green Thompson, and I'm pretty sure that he was my ancestor as well.
Wow.
And he's not supposed to be.
Oh. Ooh, scandalous.
Right. I have DNA matches to almost all of his children that are my highest matches. So something else was going on. But, you know, like you said, he said himself in both witness statements that he lived half a mile from, you know, whoever he was the witness for. So he was very close. He's family. So more on that later. But
gotcha.
Anyone else?
I have to mention my cousins. At the beginning of the COVID pandemic, we had a family Zoom, and it included cousins all over the country. And within that family Zoom, we were able to work on our genealogy. It was a group effort. And one of the most powerful things that happened to us, on Ancestry.com, there was a photograph of our great-great-grandmother with her husband. But more importantly, there were some Caucasian people there in the photograph. And the photograph was taken around 1910. Well, from further research, we found out that one of the individuals in the photograph, he was a former slave owner. But more importantly, he was one of the witnesses to help them get their land.
Wow. That is powerful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Debbie, were any of your witnesses for your homesteader, were they relatives? Did you discover that they were relatives?
I haven't discovered that they were relatives, but I'm very sure that they were, because I can imagine that when my ancestor began to cultivate the land. He was 34 years old. He was a young man, pretty much. And at the time, they did not have children. So I cannot imagine that he could have done that alone. So like Bernice said, that they all had to work together. And they were neighbors. They were neighbors. They knew each other. And they all worked together to work that land. And like Bernice said, when one of them was done and that one person got their patent, then they went and helped the other one. They had to have done that, because how could one person do all of that? You know, so right. it was just way back then, they were just so willing to work together to get this thing done. And they didn't even realize probably at the time that what a great legacy that they were leaving to their ancestors just by doing this. And to them, they were just trying to survive, you know, but, you know,
they knew they needed each other.
They knew they needed each other. They had to work together. I just wanted to show you guys, here is the soil from my great-grandfather's land. I'm so excited about it. I should put it into something special.
What does one do with this?
Exactly.
Some people use the mason jars. They get the small mason jars and they put the location on. I've seen that. There are a number of things that you can do, however you want to honor them, you know.
I'm so excited about it.
And I guess before we get into housekeeping, if you will, I was just on a panel, and we were discussing the bans on critical race theory and the role that genealogy is going to play or could play, as well as storytelling and music, as a way to kind of substitute what's the impact of these bans, right? If you're gonna not discuss race in school, and you're going to put such a limitation on what we can talk about with the history, what an important role genealogy becomes in now telling the history. And this project is a perfect example of that, right? It's right here, you know, the Black homesteaders. Now it's opened up a whole chapter of American history, and certain discussions that, you know, are trying to be avoided in the classroom show up in your family tree now. So this is just really, really important work. And, you know, with that, Bernice, we're really excited about the release of your new book. Can you share with our listeners what's next, where they can learn more about Black homesteaders of the South?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to say, I look at this book as a call to action to inspire and to influence others to look for stories of Black homesteaders. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the South. I want to see those stories coming out of Oklahoma and Arizona and Missouri. We have homestead states, public land states, where we all need to be looking for the Black homesteaders. The book will be released on Monday, October the 24th, and it will be released not only as a book, but also an ebook. And so individuals will have an opportunity to download this book and to just get all into it. And what I would like everyone, when you review this book, when you see it, tell us what you think about it. We want 500 comments about this book. I want to see as many people as possible stepping forward and saying, oh, my ancestor also owned land. But I want to just once again acknowledge all of the fantastic stories told by the descendants. 49 stories are in this book. And you can also find the stories on the National Homestead Historical Park Service website. So we have parallel opportunities to see these stories, to read these stories, but you also have it in your book, and give that book to every descendant.
Yes.
Let them know that their ancestor is now in a history book. Yes. And I want to acknowledge the enormous support from the History Press, because I submitted a proposal to the History Press on October the 29th, 2021. It's almost a year.
Yeah.
And the book is a reality. Wow. And I want to just thank the descendants for believing that this could become a reality.
And Bernice, we want to thank you for having us to be a part of it. It was just an amazing journey, and we're all very excited to be a part of history and to have our ancestors be a part of history in your book.
What's the website? Where can I purchase the book?
They can purchase the book by going, well, first of all of the book sites have the book, but ArcadiaPublishing.com. If they go to ArcadiaPublishing.com and put in the Black Homesteaders of the South, you can look inside the book and you can order the book. And so I hope that all of you will take that time to go ahead on and pre-order the book. If you don't pre-order it today, you can get it on Monday because it will be released. If that book is not in your bookstore, you request that Barnes and Nobles or whatever bookstores in your community carry the book. And if any of you would like to have a speaker come out and talk about the Black Homesteaders of the South, please contact me.
Bernice, I just want to just let you know just one thing. I was Googling the other day. I was Googling Black ancestral images. And do you know your book came up?
No.
Yeah. Yes, Black Homesteaders of the South came up. It wow. absolutely did.
Look at that. Yes. Look at that.
So Bernice, cool. Yeah, very. What are some parting words of inspiration that you would like to share with our listeners?
The most important parting word is never say never. Don't say, oh no, they didn't. Always take that step and look. You know, some people may say, well, no, they didn't own land. That's impossible. Don't block yourself up. With just because you never heard about it, it doesn't mean it didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So my parting word is to do your genealogy, to take a look at the census. Look at, is your ancestor identified as a farmer? Are they identified as someone that owns land? Well, how did they get that land? And remember, you're only looking at the 30 states. 30 public land states. So don't look in the original 13 colonies, nor Texas, because that is not where we are focusing our homestead land. Mm-hmm. Also understand that race is not mentioned, which means that if you know who you are, then you know who the land belongs to. Right. You will not see Black or white. Now, you may see information in that file as you drill into the file that may mention a Black person. But indeed, the application will not say Black or white.
Very interesting. Thank you for that. And Bernice, and to the contributors that joined us today, Orice Jenkins, Deborah Mitchell, Dr. Nona Thomas, we want to thank you so much for sharing with us and for our listeners for sharing your story. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. And we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. Thank you.